episode 710, and now for something completely the same. Hello and welcome to Technorama, the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If you are just joining us for the first time, thank you. Thank you very much. And if you are returning, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I am Chuck Tomasi here in sunny Phoenix, Arizona. And right over there out the window is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
Oh, wait, this way. That's right. No, I'm doing okay. I'm doing fine. Had a nice, relaxing weekend. Anniversary weekend.
And joining us from Oahu, Hawaii, and boy, are his arms tired.
Yeah, there you go.
It's Mad Marv, pronounced K-Y-L-E. Did I do that wrong?
Spelled K-Y-L-E, but pronounced Marv for easier.
That's right.
Yeah. Welcome. It's good to see you on the show.
Hey.
For a change.
This is his first time to the Meningay Studios.
The formerly Meningay studio, yeah.
Yeah. Is it really? Wow. For some reason, I thought you'd been there before.
I had a thought about that also. I thought there was maybe a Slice episode or something way back when.
Mm-hmm.
But, all right. Well, how's your week been, Craig? Glad to hear it. Let's move on.
Yeah. It's been okay. There you go. Move along. No, it's been fine, actually. I had to watch Picard again, the last episode, a couple of times this weekend.
I know. It was cool here, too. I had to wear a cardigan.
Yeah. Picardigan.
It's a nice day for a light sweater. It's a nice day for cardigan! You've never heard that before? Great.
No, this is not karaoke hour.
We'll do that after the show.
Right.
That's our 10 o'clock material. All right, let's get into our feedback. We did ask a question of the week last week. We said, Well, let's play the music, then we'll do it right. Yeah.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day. Mailman, mailman, mail today. Reach right in and pull one out. Those letters. I love those letters. Let's find out what you've got to say.
Oh, boy.
Our question of the week last time was, if you wrote a computer virus, what would you call it? And what would you do? What would it do that is not nefarious? Okay, we got some responses. Mike Robinson, who's also in the chat, said he'd write one called Fluffageddon.
Fluffageddon.
He said it's a program that would spawn multiple kittens that would attack and bat around the icons on the desktop. Plus, at random times, a kitten would just start meowing at you while it's sitting in the trash basket.
I've actually got a real cat that does that.
That's pretty creative. And it's too real, Roy. It's too real.
Too real. Edward Chase says, a long time ago, I stumbled upon a portable/self-contained app called Wind Penguin, or something of the sort. I added it to a coworker's autoexec.bat file. It has been a while. And 10 minutes after it started up, the computer, small penguins would randomly start dropping from the top of the screen and walk across whatever window it fell upon. It would then fall off the window. If it hit no windows, it would drop off the bottom of the screen. I think something like that would make for a funny virus. Yeah, pretty much.
Well, we have three responses and we have three hosts tonight. Kyle, would you like the one from Sweet Steve?
Steve, randomly play a sound, not often, but like a few times a day, and rarely open a command window, block the keyboard and mouse, facing some sort of hacker attack for like 5 seconds, and then back to normal.
That sounds more nefarious, though. It's like, give you a panic attack, but no, not really, just messing with you.
Oh, I got a better story than that.
What virus story do you have?
Oh, wait, you want to get the last one?
He already read that one.
Okay. So this actually happened at my J job. I use AutoCAD a lot in engineering. And like the autoexec.bat for Windows, whenever you launch AutoCAD, it'll launch a script called acad.lisp. And this occurred way back when I was first starting. Let's call it early 2000s. One AutoCAD file we got from some sub-consultant would launch the ACAD.lisp, but they happened to send their own ACAD.lisp with their CAD files, and it would have their plot settings already configured exactly for their system, because every engineer and architect just got to do their own thing. But because it overwrote the current plot settings, once our drawings, our CAD stations were set up to plot like them, we could never plot the way we want to really plot for our workstations. And that created a little bit of a problem. The real problem was because it launched that this routine every single time we launched AutoCAD, it would overwrite all of our normal plot settings. And no one would know how to fix it until I figured it out. So it wasn't exactly nefarious, and you could see how it could be beneficial. I mean, in their own office, I'm sure doing that routine would have cleaned up any kind of a problem, right? But sharing that outside the office creates a problem for every one of your associates, right? So that question you brought up brought that to memory. And yeah, I can't remember if there was a name for that routine, but I know, let's see, by 2010, I know Autodesk had written a routine or locked out that auto launching function in such a way that that kind of self-propagating CAD virus, because Google it now, that is something from a very old, long time ago. CAD viruses were a thing. And I remember a time where it was caught by antivirus, but it's no longer even searched for. It's just a random script that launches on AutoCAD launch. So that's my story of the computer virus. That's not exactly nefarious, but it's a pain in the ass.
I could have put a high-pass filter on that, and we would have called it his voicemail for this week.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. You know, my friend that passed away in December, we myself and another mutual friend went with his sister to his house, and we were looking at his stuff that he had, trying to figure out what to do with it, and I came across, there's a bunch of boxes in the bottom part of the house, a lot of old computer stuff. And there was a shoebox, and it said, "Dangerous virus inside. Do not open." It was, of course, I opened it. There's like a floppy and some USB stick.
You get the biohazard sticker on there. It says, definitely not bees.
Yeah. So he had some computer virus on there. I didn't investigate further, but I just thought that was funny. Do not open.
Did you want to do a live voicemail, or was that it?
That was it.
Oh, yeah, that was it. We transitioned incorrectly on that, but
at least he'd pick up his phone and call us.
We got the gag in there. Yeah, bring him in on Skype. It's like, is this sort of an abuse of technology that he's sitting in the same room?
Right, that's right.
The only way you know it works.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, we will have another question for you at the end of the show, so stick around. Deep thoughts from Technorama. On to the history. Oh, wait. Stop. Got to roll the D20. We have three people.
Oh, let me get my dice. One second.
Again. Unprepared. All right. Roll in. Oh, man. I did better in our practice session.
All right. The guy I bought these from, he said they were guaranteed.
What is that? You got to roll and get it. End up in the crack. Okay. What do you got, Craig?
I got a 6.
I got a 4.
I'm taking these dice back to Dragon Con and returning them.
That's one reason to go back to Dragon Con.
That's right.
These 99-cent dice stink. I want some, or do you roll your big, good metal ones?
The metal ones. That was the...
You spend all that money and you still get crummy rolls.
Look, $40. There you go. We got the metal ones.
Kyle's leading this off. You ready?
He said he cast a spell on it, but I don't know. So what's the order?
Yeah. How
does Kyle, Craig, Chuck.
Okay, I'm second. Okay, gotcha.
Okay. Just follow Kyle. You'll be fine.
Got it. Yep.
Here we go. You're going to regret that.
On this day in history for April 26, 2023, this is the 116th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 249 days and counting.
It was on this date in 1954 that the first clinical trials of Jonas Sykes polio vaccine was begun in Fairfax County, Virginia.
All right, and on this day in April 26, 1956, SS Ideal X, the world's first successful container ship, left Port Newark New Jersey, or Houston, Texas?
I'm not sure if it's the Ideal X or the Ideal 10. I have no idea.
I just want to
do it. 65 years ago today was the final run of the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad's Royal Blue from Washington, D.C. to New York City. After 68 years, the first U.S. passenger train to use electric locomotives. How about that, kids? And they stopped it 65 years ago.
It was 61 years ago today that NASA's Ranger 4 spacecraft crashed into the moon.
On purpose.
Yeah, on purpose. April 26, 1962, the British Space Program launches its first satellite, the Ariel 1.
And it was 37 years ago today that the Chernobyl disaster, 37 years already, occurred in the Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic.
April 26, 1993, the Space Shuttle Columbia was launched on mission STS-55 to conduct experiments aboard the Space Lab module.
And that same day in 2019, Marvel Studios' blockbuster film Avengers Endgame was released, becoming the highest grossing film of all time, surpassing the previous box office record of Avatar.
Happy birthday goes out of this date to Italian painter and academic Gianpaolo Lomazzo, born on the state in 1538.
Christian Leopold von Butch, German geologist and paleontologist, was born on that same date in 1774.
And American banker, lawyer, and politician Charles Goodyear was born 219 years ago today.
English physicist and academic Nobel Prize laureate Owen Willens Richardson was born on a date in 1878.
79, right?
That's you.
1879, sorry, off by one bug.
Oh, yeah.
Charles Francis Richter, the American seismologist and physicist, was born 123 years ago today.
And also born on that same date in 1933, German-American physicist, academic, and Nobel Prize laureate, like we don't have enough of those around here, Arno Allen Penzias.
Penzias, as in Penzias and Wilson?
Yes.
Wow. Got to get your...
pencils?
No, you got to get your universe on, man. American actress, singer, and producer Carol Burnett is 90 today.
Wow.
Also turning 80 today is American singer, songwriter, keyboard player, and producer Gary Wright.
Quick, name a Gary Wright song.
Cars.
Name another Gary Wright song.
Another one? I don't remember another one.
At first I thought this was Gary Glitter, but that's a different guy.
Yeah, it's Dreamweaver Dude.
Happy birthday goes... I just love making Craig squirm like that. He'll come up with some other song like three quarters of the way through the show because he's been Googling it all night. April 26th is Steve London's birthday from Sweden. He's been waiting all year to say that one. Happy birthday to you. I guess we've all been waiting a year to say happy birthday, haven't we?
Yeah.
Three birthdays on April 29th, including Shepherd Tom from Outside the Known Universe. That's an impressive long-distance call, if he could make call our voicemail. Timothy Carr from the, he doesn't say where he's from. It just says the 29th. And Dhruv Gupta from our own ServiceNow developer ecosystem. Happy birthday to them. And one more. Julio Diaz. Julio made that cool drawing we have of, you know, me in the big red chair. And you with the headphones. Yep.
Yeah.
Happy birthday to all of you. If it's your birthday this week and you're not on the calendar, we wish you all the best and hope you can get on the calendar sometime. Go over to chuckchat.com/Craig. Craig.
Oh, I'm actually trying to pull it up. Hold on a second.
chuckchat.com/birthday. I was going to say it, but I didn't want to leave Craig in the dust. You know, no podcaster left behind.
Is that what it is?
We better talk really slow.
It was in the podcasting handbook. Yeah.
Happy birthday to everybody. Get yourself on the calendar, and we wish you the best, as I already said. All right. Let's fade this out.
And Michelle Lopez's husband, Frank.
Happy birthday, Frank.
Yeah, happy birthday.
That was in the comments, not on the calendar.
I know. I was just, she needs to put him on the calendar.
Is it canon if it's not on our birthday calendar?
Nope, but we'll just We'll kind of recognize it anyway. Michelle's a long-time listener. We'll recognize it anyway.
Country signs. All right, let's find a random one. Craig, I'm not so sure about... I'm not so sure about these first two articles. We read through these, and it just didn't grab me. But I am curious to see what grabbed your attention aside from the headline.
I was just trying to find something a little different.
Okay. All. Well, we have a brain science. And Kyle, I believe you said you read this or heard it on a podcast or something.
Oh, damn. I didn't know I'd have to talk about it now.
Wait, you're now the expert.
If you're one chapter ahead in the book, you're the teacher.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Kyle's the guest expert we have on the show tonight. So
we couldn't actually get a real brain scientist here.
But he did stay in a Holiday Inn Express last night.
Okay, and from that, I guess I can just read the story?
If you wish. Or start us off.
No, let's cut to the chase.
Oh, the decaps?
No, a little bit before. So back in 2020, researchers from institutes in Germany and Greece reported a mechanism in the brain's outer cortical cells that produce a novel graded signal all on its own, one that could provide individual neurons with another way to carry out their logical functions. By measuring the electrical activity in sections of tissue removed during surgery on epileptic patients and analyzing their structure using fluorescent microscopy, the neurologist found individual cells in the cortex used not just the usual sodium ions to fire, but calcium as well. I got no idea what that really was meant to mean, but I just remember that there is some kind of redundant way for neurons to fire. And the way this is relevant is that if anyone's been following AI and basically how the underlying mechanism of the way AI works from differently from traditional computer programming, say doing image recognition and you're training an AI model to recognize a cat. After enough repeated exposures to things that you're telling it a cat, it develops a pattern. After it sees that pattern in an image, it'll fire off some kind of in human terms, it would be a neuron. I forget what that's called in technology. But this research seems to indicate that the human brain has more than one way to fire off that neuron, whereas in AI, it's pretty much just done by silicon.
Hmm.
So that's one new thing, but not terribly applicable to everyday life here. But it is interesting in the mysteries of the brain.
I did learn a few new terms out of this article, like the dendritic... What was it? That
thing you can't read at the bottom of the screen, yeah.
It was the
dendrite.
Calcium mediated dendritic action potentials, or decaps.
Ow. It's hurting my head just hearing you say it.
How about this one? Sodium chloride and potassium.
Okay.
Oh, there is some interesting stuff in here. The part that made me connect it with the computer was when they started talking about for the logical underpinnings of the brain. They said ripples of voltage that can be communicated effectively in two forms, either an AND message, where you say if X and Y are triggered, the message is passed on. Because they're talking about you know, when you see a picture of a nerve cell, it's got like the branches going out, kind of like a tree.
Yeah. Right.
The dendrites are those arms, and then you have the synapses at the end of those that connect it. That's the gap between I thought it was interesting because neurons typically use electricity, but when you fire that message across the synapse, it's a chemical message, which is
because there's a gap there.
Well, I mean, spark plugs have gaps too, but they still manage to get the spark across.
Mm-hmm.
But they talk about ands, ors, and xors. And I said, Craig, you and I just had this discussion about this week.
Yeah,
I asked colleague, I said, hey, would you prefer A or B? And I got back a chat message that said, yes.
That's right.
Okay. I just copy and pasted it to Craig. It's going to be one of those days.
Yeah.
Or one of those employees.
Hey, Mike Robinson said, somebody's getting salty now? The sodium, I guess.
We can actually give him the rim shot on that one. Hey, try the veal. It's here all week. We have another one.
Yeah.
About hydrogen's hidden phase. This was another one that kind of went deep on me, Craig. Aside from the article, the video.
I thought
at the
I'd
top.
Throw some different science out there. Usually we talk about space and stuff.
Yeah, but we do. We do. And we, you know, I thought you were giving me this guy going, what's this article about? Arrest made.
Oh, yeah. No.
So, I jumped ahead to the ginger ale one. I'm sorry. This was the hidden phases of hydrogen. And I saw the pictures of circles, spheres, not eggs.
They do look like eggs and ping pong balls.
But apparently there's an experiment going on at UIUC, University of Urbana, University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. And if that name rings a bell with any of you internet old timers, that is where, what did we get out of UIUC, Craig?
Miller High Life, the champagne of beers?
No.
Okay.
No. Early web browser. Think early web browser.
Oh. Yeah. Mozilla?
Mosaic.
Excuse me. Mosaic.
Yep. So anyway, they were talking about hydrogen, how it's abundant, and how when you get to heavy gravity situations like Jupiter and Saturn, what are the phases and what are the arrangements of those hydrogen molecules in this? You know, obviously you've got solids, liquids, and gases, and when you put hydrogen under a lot of pressure, you get solids, but there's different properties. And they were going through these simulations and they said, well, we could do this, but not with very large molecules because that would take a lot of compute power. So they found out three of the team were surveying different temperatures and pressures to form a complete picture when they noticed something unusual in the solid phase. While the molecules in solid hydrogen are normally close to spherical in form, a configuration called hexagonal close packed, these just sound like terms that are begging to be put on an episode of Star Trek.
Yeah.
Kepperle compared it to stacked oranges. The researcher observed a phase where the molecules become oblong figures. Kepperle described them as egg-like. So what does that mean for us everyday people? I'm not sure, but I'm...
Don't put your hydrogen under extreme temperature, gravity pressures.
Don't put all your hydrogen in one basket.
That's it.
The lesson I got out of it.
Right.
As an extra news article, Kyle came up with the idea. Let's talk about SpaceX and their rapid unscheduled disassembly they had this past week.
Wasn't that spectacular? I know, right?
It was interesting because at first, you know, you expect everybody to go, oh, man, kind of like, you know, or in shock when Challenger blew up or something. No, they didn't. And they started cheering.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to be that one guy sitting next to Elon Musk because they're like sharing one workstation and he's sitting there purely for figurative.
Yeah. Elon didn't look too thrilled, but everybody else was cheering. First, let me say something I thought was interesting. All right. So here it is, 2023. I sent a link to my dad. He's in the grocery store. He pulls up the link on his phone. He's walking through the grocery store watching this whole thing unfold, along with two of the grocery store employees. They're watching on his phone, too, because they want to see it happen.
Because they don't have a real job. I mean, they weren't real happy with their work that day. Well, I could either be stacking soup cans or watching a rocket blow up.
I thought it was funny. He was watching it on his phone as he was trying to grocery shop. I just thought that was interesting.
Oh, you're just talking about like the age we live in where we can do stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, my dad's age and he's doing that. Yes.
And
you know what? I know when we post this, he's going to end up watching it and he's going to be like, oh, come on.
This is the 2023 version of everybody standing outside the appliance store window watching the moon landing.
Yeah. Yeah. breathing on the window. Yeah.
Back up. It's fogging up. It's July. Anyway, it doesn't fog up.
So what did you guys think?
I watched it afterwards. I was not watching it real time because I had a job to do.
And I'm on vacation, so I don't have to watch things in real time anymore.
He doesn't own TV either, so he can't watch.
Touché.
Oh, wait, it was on the internet, so he
can't use it. Yeah. Well, I did have, I had my, I was working on my laptop, but I had it up on my big screen, with my other computer, and I was watching it, and it, I couldn't help but watch it. Everybody else on my team's like, look, they're going live now. I'm like, hey, my boss, you know, my manager.
That was
like
a big rocket. That's huge.
It was, you know,
like 27 of them.
Yeah, it's huge. You know, it's huge. But there was a shot that they showed, and I don't know if you guys saw this, but it was a guy walking, climbing down a ladder, and they had a drone up there, and and the drone backed off, and it was like, wow, that really put it into scale. He was like, he was tiny compared to that whole thing.
Was he holding a banana for scale?
He could have been. I didn't see it, but yeah. So anyway, I thought it was fascinating to watch. I was excited when it took off and made it past the past the launch pad, got off of that. And I knew it was, I was expecting it to go, well, I guess everybody was, the plan was to go actually into orbit and then have it crash right outside of Kyle's, you know, front yard.
Yeah. That's why he was here. I don't trust those Elon rockets.
I'm leaving. See you guys later. So anyway, I think it just blew up a little bit sooner than they expected it. But yeah, it was pretty spectacular to see.
It's always fun to watch a rocket launch.
Yeah. Well, you know, SpaceX had to go through several iterations before they got Falcon 9, you know, on a regular cadence where it would work reliably. Yep. So.
Or they get the first stage to land on a barge. Oof. Yeah. So it's a share of mistakes on that.
Although the one thing I kept thinking of was, you know, it's one thing if one part of that blew up, but the whole thing blew up. You know, with the bottom part, with the, I assume the booster was, they were expecting it to do a hard land in the water as well.
They were supposed to land both halves, but it's also supposed to separate cleanly and then be, ideally perfect execution would have had two halves of it landing separately.
It was cool watching it in the air. You're just kind of tumbling around going, okay, clearly this isn't working the way it's supposed to. Did they say whether they blew it up on purpose or if it blew up on its own?
Yeah, that was a self-destruct.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah, probably like hit the panic button when it started flipping around.
Just glad there were no humans, you know, involved in the disaster.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously there were humans involved with the disaster because it was human engineered, but nobody was hurt.
Yeah. What did they, during the broadcast, I think they said they had 8 more built out, ready to go.
So yeah, and they said there's going to be another launch. It was fairly soon, I thought. Like in a few months.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be cool. Let's go watch some more fireworks.
They launched from Texas. I thought that was interesting.
That's their headquarters now in Boca Chica.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's their headquarters down there now.
Hmm. Okay, so SpaceX doesn't launch from Canaveral or anything ordinary.
They're supposed to. I remember other stories about it. I'm not sure if the next one will be from Texas because they're supposed to be launching from Canaveral. They don't have the right permits, right? To keep launching this size vehicles from Texas.
Oh, they don't? More than one?
Well, the story last year when I was following it, they were trying to get their current permit modified, but you know, it wasn't really meant for that size rockets.
Yeah, I think the big thing that because of the area they're in was environmental. Mm-hmm. I think that's the case because it's right there on the edge of the coast, you know, so they were worried about the wildlife that's right there.
They could go to the Baikonur Cosmodrome, maybe.
Yeah.
It's in Kazakhstan.
Well, maybe. It'd be a long way to haul it around before you launch it. So
just build it there.
I guess from Texas, you could at least float it over to Florida.
They should land the first stage of the Baikonur Cosmodrome. Say you launch your rocket, but the parts come down on somebody else's landing pad.
Yeah,
it was already here. Why not?
Yeah, can you imagine their surprise? That's right.
Right as they're about to launch. Hey, the gate's not open. Wave them off.
Yeah. Well, if they didn't have the right permits, how were they able to launch it yesterday? Or, I'm sorry, last week?
I'm pretty sure they got something worked out, but who knows what long term is, right?
Yeah, that's true.
All right.
Anyway.
Good talk.
Cool, and it was going on the list.
Yep. Quick shout out to the chat room. Looks like we've got Clinton, and we mentioned Mike. We also have Michelle. That's about it for now. But if you're out there, give us a shout. We know somebody's out there. Yeah, Clinton says Chernobyl's available.
Yeah, let's go there.
All right, join us Sundays, 8:30 Eastern time. We'd love to hear from you or join in the Insanity Live. You get some things that don't always make it to the audio podcast. So there's that too.
Really?
Yeah, we gotta ask like all the television stations and whatnot to move their awards shows off of Sunday nights.
Yeah.
And the Super Bowl and everything else. It's so interfering with our schedule.
Yeah, we have to get the FAA to clear the airspace on Sunday nights for us.
That's the point of podcasting, is we don't use the FAA.
And well, I think you're talking about the FCC.
Them too.
It's also the point of podcast that we don't use the FAA.
FAA, FCC, it's just a couple letters. I don't know about you, but I strive for A's.
That's right. Yeah, Clinton says they'll move into Thursday nights. That's when we record.
What was the death slot? Friday nights? No. Where did they put Star Trek when it eventually went? Oh, man, that's not the best place.
I thought
it was Friday.
Maybe it was like, Friday nights.
Nobody's around on Fridays.
Yeah. Oh, well.
All right. Quick thank you to our patrons. Sure, why not? Because we're here. Oh,
thank you,
look
Kyle.
At Mr. Hey. Lower Third. Yeah.
look to your left, Chuck, and thank him right now.
I'm taking his wallet as we speak. We also take credit cards now. These are the people who support this show financially with as little as a dollar an episode. You too can support it, whether you think it's funny or not, educational or not. That's totally up to you. These people did. They thought something, and we are happy for it. Alexis Duran, thank you, Amber Elstad and Amy Bowen, Abner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, Chris Martinez, Chris MC, Dandy Mancoyer, thank you, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros, John Clifford, John Noble, Jorga Schrauen, Crazy No Adventures, this guy to my left.
Right.
Kyle Nishioka, Leon, Mark Kilfoyle, Brad Miller. He'd be severely to my right by about an hour. Mike Wills, Saturday Morning Media, Stephen Weshey, Steve Cody. Maybe we should just have one of those signs like Tokyo, 8,000 miles that way. You know, we could do that with our members.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, that's actually a pretty good idea. Steve Therian, Steve Webb, Steve London, Tim Cook. And I just, you know, we could slap a new label up there when people get to be a member. Thank you, everybody. They went to patreon.com/technoramapodcast, signed up, and committed themselves. Wait, that didn't sound right.
Yeah.
They're committed to supporting this show, and we appreciate it. Maybe we're the ones who ought to be committed.
Agreed.
All right. End of the lower third, end of the music. And now we come to the part of the show where we share media and stuff with you.
All right.
We've been watching, listening to, reading, if we could read. I can't read. I'm illegitimate. Oh, wait. I knew I messed that up again.
Illegitimate. You better talk to your parents.
They had nine of us. Who knows where they came from?
Right.
Okay, real quick, I watched yet another musical documentary, this time called Miles Davis, Birth of Cool. Now, many of you know Miles Davis, the trumpet player. Man, if you want to talk about an artist who could change with the times, he's it.
Really? Okay.
He started very young playing his trumpet. I mean, he was hired in a band when he was like 17. You know, he wasn't even big enough to fit in the suits they gave him off the rack. But there he is sitting there, playing his trumpet. He did a great job. Then he came into his own with his own style.
Yep.
But as jazz was starting to fade out of favor in terms of like funk, you know, we're talking about late 60s, early 70s now. He modified for that. He was talking to like Sly and the Family Stone, and they said, "Hey, we just got paid all this money to play one gig And he's like, that's how much I would get if I were working a week at the clubs playing three sets a night. So it wasn't, but for him, it wasn't about the money. And he was very dedicated to his music such that it cost him his family. He was married like three or four times.
Wow.
You know, and he had a rather rough personality sometimes. But he knew how to change with the times. And he finally passed away, I want to say at the age of about 70, 71 in 1991. So very interesting stuff. I did not know. I love these documentaries because they really go into the lives and beautiful photographs, some wonderful footage, stories you've never heard of. You know, the time he almost died from drug abuse or alcohol abuse, but then he came out of it. And then, you know, back and forth, he went to Paris for a number of years and then he came back to the U.S. Got hit, literally hit on the head with racism. I mean, it was, he's standing outside a club that has his name on the marquee. It says Miles Davis. And he goes outside to take a smoke underneath the marquee. And this cop comes up and says, you got to move along. He says,
I got to go back into work.
The F are you? Because I'm Miles Davis.
Yeah.
And he still got knocked on the head and bloody and taken to jail. Like, what? You know, it was a different time.
Yeah. Terrible. That was very terrible.
That was the first one I had.
Okay. So the other one was Kim and I watched Ghosted, which was it's a movie on Apple TV.
Mm-hmm.
And it had Chris Evans and who was that? Anna de Armas. I'm not saying her name right. And of course, they had some other cameos and stuff in it too. But Chris Evans meets this girl at a farmer's market where he has a booth, and he liked her, and he asked her out. They go on a date. They're not 100% honest with each other on some things. Well, she goes on a trip. He thinks she's some interior decorator. She goes on a trip to London, and he decides, I'm just going to show up and meet her. Well, turns out she's not an interior decorator. Anyways, hijinks and zoos. I'm not going to give it all away because I think that would kind of break it. But it was an okay movie. I wouldn't say it was great, but it was likable. You know, it's likable enough. So I would give it about a 5 out of 10 sort of kind of thing. But yeah, it wasn't too bad.
Kyle's got one in here.
Okay.
He typed it in as we were talking.
Oh.
This just in from the Technorama news desk.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't watch much TV. I don't have a TV at home. So I've been reading a bunch of Lit RPG, and this past, well, call it a couple of weeks because my last week is on vacation and I haven't really picked up anything new since then. But Book 7 of Noobtown, title is Tower of the Noobs. This is more or less classic D&D in, you know, main character dies in Earth and then gets transported to a magical world where pretty much D&D rules apply, and he's going on an adventure to save the world because what else do you do?
You shouldn't bring my D20.
Yeah.
Yeah, not until I return these.
But anyway, he founds he becomes the mayor of a town called Noobtown, and he has to go save the world, and not to give away anything, but he keeps on trying to save the world and other things keep coming at him. But anyway, that's Book 7, and I know Book 8 is supposed to come out later this year. I also back the author. His name is Ryan Rimmel. I back his Patreon, too. And a little disappointed that as part of the Patreon, I got to read early chapters of it. And you know how people are. They just got to help put in their feedback while he's still writing the book.
Oh, so.
Some stuff made it into the book. Others, like typos, didn't make the edits. Second one, He Who Fights with Monsters. I know Craig and Chuck, I gifted you the first book in the series. I know you guys are still reading it, but Book 9 was just released a week or two ago, and I was talking with Chuck earlier today. So yeah, this is another series in Elite RPG where the main character dies in real life and gets transported to a magical world. And he has a very long-running quest to save the world, this time Earth, plus the world that he got transported into.
Did they ever give that other world a name?
Yes, but I never remember it because it's not mentioned that often.
They mentioned like the town names, but
yeah,
I don't remember the world or the planet or something.
Yeah, but it's not. Well, the name of the world doesn't really mean anything to me because it's I didn't recognize it out of Earth mythology.
It's called Noobtown.
Yeah, that would be something. Right.
That's right. Gonna be my new band name.
Yeah, Chuck and I were talking. This one, I know on the author's his Discord server, people have been talking about it. I know he's written way ahead of the books that have been released because he releases his chapters to his Patreon channel and also on Royal Road. So I think the story is supposed to wrap up by book 12, but I hear rumors saying it might go even longer than 12 books, but it's going strong. And I like these two lit RPG series because they incorporate a lot of humor into their writing. It's not just about hacking and slashing and killing stuff.
So right.
That's the main attraction to me with lit RPG. They take a very well-known concept of RPGs, and then they put a little, call it a modern-day sensibility to it and don't take it all too seriously like they would if they're completely in character.
Nice. Yeah, I'm enjoying it. I need to get through it faster, though, because I usually listen to it like on my morning walks after the podcasts are done, and sometimes the podcasts aren't done. So it might be a week before I listen to pieces, but it's very easy to pick up and put down. Mm-hmm. I had another one from Netflix called Chimp Empire, which could have been shortened to just Chimpire.
Chimp, yeah.
It's a four-part series, about an hour long each segment, about the, it's actually two groups of chimpanzees in the Ngogo National Forest over in Africa. The studies on these chimps began over 30 years ago, and it's amazing how much like people they are. With the effect that they don't really have language, but they do communicate with each other. There are social structures, and they mainly follow what they call the central group. Obviously, they're central to the forest. And then there's the Westerners, who used to be part of the central group, but they broke off, and now they're rivals. And they have a totally different system of governing. It's not like, here's your alpha male, and here's the people, the chimps that stick up for him and is part of his gang. When they go out on patrol, the women go with them. You know, the Westerners are completely different structure hierarchically and socially. I thought it was amazing the way that they interact, the way that they go through these different stages in their lives. But in these four episodes, they cover so much, and you get to know these characters so deeply that, you know, if you say started out with one of the characters that, not characters, but the actual chimps, they're not characters, they give them names. It's like, here's Jackson. Jackson's the alpha male of the central group. And like, oh man, he's a real SOB sometimes in the way he leads this troop. And then you find out some of the traits and the reasons why he behaves the way he does. And at the end, you're like, I really feel for Jackson. Man, he's a complex guy, and he's had a rough life. So it I'm not going to give you any spoilers because it does have a twist at the end. They're like, ooh, didn't see that a coming. Twist. It does. It's very much you know, almost like the mafia. You know, who's in, who's out, and who do you kiss up to? And if that relationship changes, it means you're not allowed to do this. It was really fascinating from both a scientific study standpoint and an anthropological standpoint. When you look at why humans are the way they are, well, they're our closest genetic cousins, and the behaviors are so eerie sometimes. One thing I did learn is you don't want to smile at a chimpanzee. No, would they show their teeth when they're on the warpath?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
It looked really funny because here come the Westerners and they're all rallying behind, you know, Darius or whatever his name is. And all the other ones look like goons behind him going, here we go, boss. Like, no, they are deadly serious at that point.
Right.
But it looked so goofy. It's like, I was started laughing. I was curious how they got some of this footage because they're following these chimpanzees through the forest. You can't do that with a drone. You can't do that on foot, or you'd be interfering with them, or they really have a close bond and trust with every human on the camera crew. I cannot figure this out.
Well, I know I've seen documentaries with gorillas, and I'm like, how do they get this? So it seems, I know they got zoom lenses, but
without disturbing
them. How close
them.
Can you get? Yeah.
Right. Right.
Oh, by the way, Kyle, Michelle has a question for you. She says, do I have to read all six before I can pick that one book up you were talking about?
You probably would enjoy it better if you started from the beginning. Cause yeah, there are a lot of callbacks, a lot of inside jokes.
Mm-hmm. And book one is really the universe building one.
Yeah. Although the character that became the favorite of all the fans doesn't appear until book two.
Oh, really? It's not Jason?
No, sorry. He's talking about Noobtown.
Oh, Noobtown. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Oh,
here you go. Clinton says, the times changed to suit Miles.
Not Miles changing to suit the times.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
He was so cool. You've got one more, Craig?
Sort of. I love Pluto TV because sometimes you can find something on it and just keep watching it, like Star Trek or some of those old sitcoms or something like that. And I got stuck on This Old House. They were just running through season 35, I think it was what we were watching. And some of the, I gotta tell you.
Wait, who hosts that these days? Is it still Bob Vila?
Kevin O'Connor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Our Kevin O'Connor? TD0013?
No, not that one. No, I don't think so. No, but Kevin O'Connor.
You're going to want a hammer here.
But I just wanted to point out, you watch those guys doing their work, and it's like, you know, they're calculating distance or length, no issues, and they know how to do everything, or they know a million ways to make something happen. And it's just amazing to see guys in their element that have a lot of experience that they're able to pull upon, you know, just off the top of their head to make things happen, especially with construction. They're just building houses like it's, you know, no big deal. It's kind of amazing.
All right. I have to write something down before I forget. Okay. Sorry. I had an idea. Kyle and I were talking about something before. Yeah, I showed you. Remember the Adult Swim video things that I did and they use these at Dragon Con, the black and white with the text and the music. And I showed you three of them that I had made like last July.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I totally forgot about them until today.
Oh, really? Okay.
And it's a good thing too, because they were destined to become sort of walk-in videos when you come into the keynotes. So I want to have these playing on the screen when people are walking into our keynote in the conference next month. If I had found them in June, I would have been really mad. Yeah, well, I wanted to get my brain back in that gear of finding these little nuggets of comedy and putting them on the screen.
That's right.
Yeah. And I was talking with Donna earlier today, and I said, okay, if the formula for work is force times distance, and most programmers don't move, are we really doing work?
Yeah.
And then Donna said, it means you're using brute force. I went, oh, that's brute good.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
So I had to scratch that down before I forgot.
Scott Tyler did a shout out to you there, Kyle.
Hey, Scott.
Did you two know each other? I'm just kidding. I
know. Yeah. Once or twice you've met. Yeah.
I have one more from Netflix called Birth of the Dragon. This is a Bruce Lee story, obviously not played by Bruce Lee. It takes place in the early 60s, where if the story can be trusted, I don't know my Bruce Lee facts well enough, but he was kicked out of, was it Hong Kong? Or was it Shanghai? I can't remember where he grew up, but he was kind of kicked out because he got in trouble at like the age of 16, and they said, you know, you're not welcome anymore. So he went to America, and he was just starting to teach Kung Fu to the public, which was frowned upon by the Shaolin monks. Because up until that point, Kung Fu was only for the Shaolin monks. And there's this epic challenge between the Shaolin monk who comes to America and Bruce Lee. So it's not just about the battle. There's other stories that happen around this as to why because the monk said, I don't want to fight. I came here to wash dishes. I'm paying a penance because I did something bad in the old country. But it was fun. And if you're up for a good martial arts fight, they do a great job with the video for that. There's only a couple spots where they had wire work, which I really don't care for in martial right. arts movies. But it was used cleverly in this. Going, ooh, cool. Okay, that was kind of Zen spiritual stuff that they did there. So I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. All right. I think that takes care of our pass the remote. Where are we on the play clock here? Oh, we're coming up towards the end, which is good because we're coming up towards the end. A couple of things in the media corner. Let's play the media corner. No, that's not media corner. That's media corner.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here in the media corner.
All right, Craig, you gave us a long article here, so I'm just going to scan over it.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's from slashfilm.com, titled Star Wars Deleted Scenes That Could Have Changed Everything. Debatable by some.
Okay.
There's one that says, Qui-Gon takes out a Sith probe droid, which would have been cool to see and answered a few questions. And they give some reasons what could have been. They say, here's the scene that was deleted, 22 seconds. Here's what could have been if we'd put that 22-second film in there, and why it would have made sense. For example, if Qui-Gon had taken out the Sith droid, it would have explained, just as Anakin yelled into the wind, why the two were sprinting back to the ship. Or
yeah, because it just looked like they were just running for
how
no reason.
Darth Maul knew exactly where they were. So it was, there's another one in the Phantom Menace in the Council where Yaddle actually speaks. Now, Yaddle was the same species as Yoda. And they were, everybody was wondering, is everybody, you know, speak
backwards?
Not backwards, but, you know, putting things in a different order. Yeah. And that goes back and forth. There's quite the discussion on that. I thought my theory is that, you know, Yoda's over 900 years old. He probably had a stroke when he was 720.
Well, come on.
What? It could have happened
too soon.
There's many, many others in here. The one that, the other one that caught my eye, was the title crawl for Rogue One.
Yeah.
Or lack thereof, we should say.
Yeah.
So the excuse, I want to read this one. It says, the scene, traditional title crawl, was prepared for Rogue One, but deleted. What might have been? When a person sits down to a Star Wars movie, there are five things that should happen in order. Number one, fanfare and Lucasfilm logo. Right. Number two, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Number three, John Williams Blair! I love the way they spell it. Number four, the title crawl. And number five, spaceship. Rogue One had none of this. Okay. And it goes on to say the reason they did this was to separate this from the quote unquote, the Skywalker storyline, which is rather odd because they ended with two Skywalkers on the screen, Darth and Leia.
Like, yeah, they sure did.
So they did. That argument fails. Yeah. It's really a good article. At least that part. There's another one about Luke and Biggs part one. Mm-hmm. Vader reached out to Luke through the Force. You know, when they're in Return of the Jedi, and he looks out the window, and they can sort of sense each other.
Yes.
Maz Kanata gave the Skywalker lightsaber to Leia. She done that, what would have happened? So. Yeah. Going to leave this up to the readers to explore and draw their own conclusions.
Yeah, there's some interesting little tidbits in there.
We also have a YouTube video for the Star Trek Enterprise Detour in 4K, which looks like, it kind of reminded me of the video of the episode where the Klingons hack Geordi's visor and you see him walking around. Oh, what's he doing now?
Yeah, he took a shower and now he's walking around. Yeah, but this was a 3D rendering of the Enterprise D project that was shut down by CBS.
Oh, because Kyle you thought it was a game or like
a recorded playthrough of a 3D game. Yeah.
Well, they were using I don't know if it was Unreal Engine or something, but they pretty much redid the entire Enterprise D in this. I can't remember exactly the whole thing. But
it's an hour and 45 minutes, people.
Yeah, I did skip around a little bit, and some of it's really, I mean, it looks very accurate in some places.
I would have superimposed pew, 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 pew. So yeah. This person's walking around with a tricorder and it's firing.
Get one of those Imperial droids, you know, going through the hallway. but no, I really like it, but they do have some people walk, you know, kind of walking around in the hallways and things like that. So it does look like part of a game, but no, I actually downloaded this. This is you can walk around the whole Enterprise.
But you can do this. You downloaded like the app that does the VR stuff.
That's right.
For your Oculus.
Yeah. No, it was before. No, I downloaded it just to my computer. You just walk around with your mouse and keyboard, which it was neat. I was able to go places and interact with a few panels, but they shut it down. So
the chat is still on the Star Wars story. Scott says the flash mob dance would have changed everything. And Mike says, what about the dance numbers?
Yeah.
Force generated jazz hands.
Oh boy. Yeah. That would have changed a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we had Jar Jar and fart jokes. So yeah.
Yeah. I know. Right.
All right, finally, anyway, should we go? You got
actually, more? You know what this reminded me of? I know we've talked about it before. Was the interactive Enterprise CD-ROM that came out a long time ago? Did you ever mess with that?
No.
Yeah, you could walk around and use the QuickTime VR, so you could walk around the Enterprise, and some of the rooms were fully done, and you could just walk. You know, you could drag the mouse around and look around. You can probably see it on online.
And if you get one of those little handy pieces from Ensign Daniels, you can walk through the wall, like on Enterprise.
Yeah, and if there's a glitch, you could probably just do it too.
I'm in space.
Yeah, the interactive technical manual. It was a CD-ROM, and you could visit places in the the bridge. You could jump to certain spots and look at it with the little VR Apple QuickTime VR.
Gotcha. Okay, one more quick thing in the Geek Library. Where did you find this one, Craig?
I don't know. I just found it on laying around on the internet.
The floor. New York Post posted an article last week that says, does ginger ale really cure nausea and upset stomach? Here's what doctors and dietitians say. So you scroll down to at least halfway through the article. What you need to know about ginger root, the truth about ginger ale and ginger. Well, most dietitians say, no. Ginger ale, the soda. Kyle, I think you were speaking up before we were recording on this one. What's your opinion?
Well, yeah, if you eat the ginger root, chew it, or make tea out of it, you'll get the benefits of it, but you won't find that in ginger ale. That's just sugar water.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Pretty much.
Flavored ginger ale. It's not even, it has no ginger in it.
Carbonated water, sugar, coloring, and very little ginger extract, if any at all.
I'll tell you what I think is actually the case is that, like, when they say drink some ginger ale, I think it's the carbonation really that does help, maybe a little bit more than anything. Not necessarily because, like you were saying, ginger ale does not have ginger in it.
Right.
I bet there's no ginger within 2 miles of the factory.
ginger beer, on the other hand, does.
Yeah. I've had ginger beer and that's, yeah, you can definitely tell it.
But it comes up and grabs you in the throat.
Yeah, it's like, but yes, right. So I think a lot of, I think one of the people mentioned this in the article, that a lot of this is like lore that's passed down in the family. You know, it's one of those kind of myths that you're told that, 100 times when you're feeling a little sick. Here, have some ginger ale and some crackers or
something. Yeah, like ours was usually Sprite or 7-Up. It's something lighter on the stomach than.
Well, see, and the commonality here, we're talking about the carbonation. That's what I was saying, because I've heard other people say Sprite as well. So I thought maybe it's just carbonated, the carbonation part of it that kind of helps.
Could be.
Yeah. Along with, some crackers or something.
But given the you know, if you're susceptible to diabetes or whatever, don't do the sugar water thing.
No, just get some seltzer water. You'll probably be fine. But yeah, I think, didn't they mention in here that it was kind of one of those lores that's kind of passed down?
Mike says, why isn't ginger flavored fluids red?
It's because they don't have ginger in it.
Well, no, he's talking about like redheaded people are called gingers.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. They took the blood out. It's right. Been sanitized for your benefit.
I know ginger has some good health benefits by itself, but
I'm more of a Marianne person.
Yeah.
Did we do that?
I'm fine either way.
All right, yeah. That leads into, that's a good segue to our question of the week.
Right.
Which characters in universes would make for the most interesting trading places, the crossovers? And Craig gives you an example of Spock attending Hogwarts. Or
what if you took the characters out of Gilligan's Island and put them in Star Wars?
You have to swap someone the other way too. So if Spock goes to Hogwarts, then Hermione is on the Enterprise. Okay, we're gonna make this a double.
I like the idea of the cast of Gilligan's Island. Are the characters being stuck in Star Wars?
Are cartoons in scope for this question?
Sure, why not?
Okay, characters in universes. Okay, so you could go literary. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Any initial thoughts, Kyle?
Well, I did the one with Spock in it.
Oh, you did that one.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't think I put that in there. Yeah.
I thought you did. Well, the bar's been set high.
That's right.
Let's see. You could take. What could you do with, like, Thing from the Fantastic Four?
Wait.
Thing from the Fantastic Four swap with Thing from the Addams Family.
Right.
Godzilla and Scooby-Doo. Swap those two and see what happens.
Yeah.
Mr. McGregor.
Hey, Scoob. Yeah.
Scoob's trash in the Tokyo Tower again.
Yeah.
Roar. Oh, that was fun. We'll give that some thought over the week and see what happens. As you go through your different television shows and books and podcasts and whatnot, think about what you could swap around just for fun and what would happen. We'd love to hear.
What if you put Doctor Who on Star Trek as the Doctor?
Well, then you could go anywhere, anytime. That'd be pretty cool. And you could fix anything instead of reversing the polarity. Just get out your sonic screwdriver.
Yeah.
That's right. Or you can cross over, so let's say video games and movies. Like, I've just thought of GLaDOS and Terminator replacing Skynet.
Wow. Wow, that would be an interesting twist, wouldn't it?
Or Marvin from Hitchhikers replacing Skynet. You know, with a bunch of depressed robots.
I don't know if what's worse. Yeah. Robots that want to kill us, or robots that are just depressed walking around.
And then you get on the Heart of Gold and there's Arnold.
Oh,
I am a glorified vacuum cleaner.
Oh. That's pretty funny.
All right. See where you can go with this. I'm sure everybody's going to have fun with that. Takes us to the end of the show. Thank you very much for joining us, Kyle.
Hey, thank you for having me.
A rare and always appreciated treat. Yeah, we don't get to see too many people outside of our Dragon Con sphere. Jar Jar and Buzz Lightyear. Oh, dear Lord.
Mr. Ed and Groot.
Jar Jar.
That could actually work.
Hello, I'm Groot. Let's head on out of here while people think about that a little harder. No, that's the beginning, and we want the longer one. There. We're going to be out of here in 10 seconds.
I can see Groot saying, I am Groot, and Wilbur's like, yeah, I know what you mean. You know, just kind of understanding him anyway. It's kind of what he did on the show anyway.
Right. If you want to get in touch with us, send us your ideas of who can be swapped around and what would happen. 707-530-2428. Craig's busily working his fingers to put that up on the bottom of the screen. Right. Email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. Yes, producer and director now. Kyle, any place that you can give a shout out for people to go?
You can go to Mad Marv online and check out my work there.
Yes! Photos! He took more of them this week.
Yeah. Might be a while to get them up, though.
He's got to put his little name on the corner of all of them. He types that in every time.
Right.
All right. Till next time, Craig, give us a binary high five.
All right. 101.
Take care, everybody.